At IKEA, your dream home is a blue bag away. No matter the size of your space or budget, we've got everything you need to turn your dreams into reality. And now with new lower prices on hundreds of our most popular products, bringing the dream home is even easier. Like the gray Strandom wing chair, was $369, now $299. And the IKEA Plus 365 9-piece cookware set was $129.99, now $89.99. And hundreds more. Shop new lower prices at ikea-usa.com today.
Hey, welcome to IKEA, where even this desk is circular.
Huh. How so? Looks pretty rectangular to me.
It's because we're always looking to repair, reuse, and relove our products, like buying back your IKEA items for store credit. Or shop our as-is section for great deals. You can even order free spare parts. Get on the circular path for a more sustainable future.
Still a rectangle.
Get started at ikea-usa.com/circular. Visit ikea-usa.com/circular for as-is information and buyback and resale terms and conditions. Spare parts not available for all products.
This show is part of the Head Stuff Podcast Network, a hub for the creative and the curious. Shows are produced in association with Head Stuff and the Podcast Studios Dublin. Find out more or become a member at headstuffpodcasts.com.
Hello, and welcome back to F&I Rapture. I'm your host, Mark Monks, and it's been a wee minute since I've been on the pod. But today, I'm joined by some very special filmmakers, director Fintan Connolly and producer Fiona Bergen, who both co-wrote this film called Barber, starring Aidan Gillen. It's a nice kind of thriller, kind of character-based film that's like some interesting investigations and like a developing relationship and all that sort of stuff. And today I get to chat with them about the kind of process of the film and like what the film's about and the meanings and themes and all that sort of stuff. So if you'd like to support us, head on over to buymeacoffee.com. It is very much appreciated. On with the episode. Welcome to the show, Fintan and Fiona. I loved your film. Congratulations with it as well.
Thanks, Megan.
It's getting a wide release and everything now. That's crazy, you know? What I'd like to kind of like start off with is like your kind of like background in your the two of your backgrounds in like mainly kind of character based and like kind of character studies in film, probably aside from flick. But with this film in particular, what was it like kind of balancing the character kind of study of Val Barber and also the kind of like overarching plot of the crime, like the investigation?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose the thing was, it was really, it's almost like two, it's his personal life and then the kind of genre detective piece. That was the trick really, was to try and get the two to, for them both to work.
Yeah, well,
I suppose that's up to the audience to decide if it did, but that was the ambition.
I think the whole idea was we'd have kind of a multi-layered character.
Yeah.
So you'd have like the kind of puzzle that he has to solve, and then you have his own kind of complicated life, you know?
Yeah.
So we play around a lot with that idea of like everybody has secrets. So, I mean, he's a man who has his own secrets, even though he's trying to uncover other people's.
So
that fed into the plot. So the whole idea was to make him as interesting as possible, any character.
That was the one thing I found very interesting with the film, because I've seen, like, I was, like, in preparation, I was watching a bit of, like, neo-noir kind of film as well. Mm. Okay. I was not too well-versed in it. Like I said, like, I'm a big monster movie guy, so, so I had to, like, do a
monster noir.
Yeah. And, like, I was watching films like Double Indemnity to try to get, like, into the kind of mindset of that. And kind of what I liked about Barber, what kind of sets it apart is his character. You know, he's a very layered kind of character, a deep character who has flaws. He's not just, oh, I'm the super detective, I can just, you know, solve it straight away, kind of like Sherlock or something like that. He has flaws, you know, and I love that.
Yeah, so I suppose it was also the idea of a kind of a middle-aged character. So that's, you know, he's older, so there's just more stuff, more baggage, more history, really. So it was that too. And then Aidan brought a lot to the character, I have to say. He brought a lot of... softness and you know, yeah, he just brought a lot to the character.
Yeah.
From what was on the page. And of course, that's the great thing. And then Owen, obviously, the way it looks. And
yes.
So there was lots of, you know,
lots of
great
elements.
People
like
involved.
Film. Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I
and
suppose
the music.
And the genre itself, I mean, I in fact, I noticed something recently on IMDb that you can't actually call your film a film noir. They're only really referred to from those films from the 40s are allowed to call themselves that. Everything now is a neo-noir or whatever. But we both grew up loving kind of TV shows like The Rockford Files and Columbo and stuff like that. So, you know, it's a great genre, I think, for like building a character and also building a kind of a story around them, you know.
Yeah.
Meeting different people, traveling through different situations.
Yeah, a detective moves a lot. You know, they're moving in and out of things. So it gives you, like, good possible storylines.
Yeah, which tied into the way the production as well, because we had Aidan, obviously, for the 3 weeks, but then we had other actors just in for a day or two, you know, for their scenes and that. So the production and the story kind of were aligned, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. That's what I kind of liked about it, though. Like, I'd loved the use of like the city centre, just Dublin, as a setting, because like not many kind of crime films are kind of use that kind of setting, like kind of utilise it, because it really felt like a kind of seedy underbelly of like, oh, what's going to happen, you know, the whole place is corrupted, that kind of stuff.
And that's that kind of genre idea, really, is that, you know, and people are very familiar with it, and I think that's why, you know, so people bring their own things to those, like those, because everyone has seen those detective films, so everybody knows the language of them. So, yeah, and, well, Fintan's always shot all his films in Dublin.
Well, it's just it's a great location, and I mean, it's
particularly... And we know it.
Yeah, and it's great at night time as well, and you also have... You don't have much trouble filming on the streets like you would. I mean, we've been filming in places like London, that, where you need, like, a lot of permissions just to take out a camera and so on, you know?
I was going to ask that, like, how kind of, like... Did you have to jump many hurdles in filming in Dublin City, or was
We were fortunate as well, because we shot in September 2020, so we were just between lockdowns. So the city was really quiet, which is really helpful for a low budget picture, because so just there's lots of things. So no, we just shot on the street in all of those scenes. We just, and we used a lot of streets around where our main locations were, so like the Marlin Hotel is a So all those streets are around that.
The Keys.
We were down the Keys for his office, so we shot around those streets. So we just used the locations close to where we were, because it was a very small crew and everything was pretty low-key. So,
guerrilla filmmaking
style.
Pretty
much.
That post-lockdown time was interesting as well, because like still a lot of pubs were closed. You can see, if you look closely in the background, the Peter's Pub is kind of boarded up.
Yeah.
You know, so there was a kind of an eeriness around the city, which I think kind of helped the film. I mean, the film isn't, I mean, we shot it because the pandemic's in the background, but it wasn't that intention originally. It was just...
Yeah, no, we had to do that because
that was the way it was. I mean, we ourselves were kind of masked and tested. I mean, it was quite nerve-wracking, actually, the shoot in some ways.
Yeah, I can imagine so. I've worked on a few productions now where, like, even now, there's still, like... proper protocol just for like
our biggest concern wasn't even budgetary or weather or anything like that.
It was
actually just that someone would test positive
and then we'd be
you know.
Yeah, that's 2 weeks gone, like, you know,
and we only had three. So, you know, that's not an easy one to square.
And I mean, especially if Aidan went out.
So there were lots of things like that, and even the pandemic thing, we really, that was a kind of a last minute thing, because we realised we'd be shooting on the streets and people would be wearing masks, so you couldn't have saying, well, why are they all wearing masks? So that was why it wasn't written, that wasn't part of it when it was written, that was just something we had to do because the way we were making it.
Yeah, have like a secret post-apocalyptic kind of sign.
Otherwise people would say, why is he wearing a mask? You know,
there's a whole shift in people's mindset anyway to do with the pandemic that I still think is out there, if you know what I mean.
It's true.
We're still in post-pandemic times now,
but it suited the film, it has to be said, because it gave it this empty kind of feeling.
It did, it was very like very isolating, like there was a very like overarching theme of just like isolation, considering that like he was trying to find this girl, you know? And like he was just getting nothing from anyone, you know what I mean? And I found that quite interesting,
so that there was definitely a benefit in shooting in that period. from that point of view.
Yeah.
And people, it was interesting for crews and everything, because you know on film sets, everyone's really in everyone's face chatting away, but it was just all the social distancing and everything. Mm. It's quite different.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was, but film folk are hardy, though.
Yeah.
You know, they just got with it, but, you know, it was very different.
I think we were lucky, as we got the kind of, the word on the funding during that lockdown, we just planned for when we came out of the lockdown, then we'd start filming. So everybody, it was everybody's first project for a couple of months.
It was only the second film to shoot, I think.
And in a way, we were lucky then because everybody was very kind of keen to get back to work.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we mightn't have had that 3 week window with that crew and that cast any other time.
Yeah.
You know?
They had that kind of
yeah, they were all moving on to other things, like Owen was moving on, Aidan was moving on. So there was just that 3 week window.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
And what was it like working with Aidan again? I know he's worked with him before on Triple with Sex, wasn't it?
What
was it like with this now, with kind of like a different character?
Well, it was written for Aidan, the whole thing. So, you know, and so, I mean, it was great. I mean, he's a friend. So, you know, it was really nice to work with him, actually. And Aidan brought a lot to the project. I mean, even his interest in it, in terms of funding, and then with other actors. So, yeah, it was all pretty chilled out, really, to be honest.
Yeah, he's a fairly chilled out guy, you know. I mean, yeah, very natural actor, very intuitive, you know. I mean, and not only did he help, obviously, raise funding for the film, but he also drew all the younger actors in as well, and all the other actors, they all said, oh yeah, I'd love to do that, you know. We had no problem casting it, you know. Again, that was also a very good casting director, Maureen Hughes.
Maureen was great.
You know, once we had Aidan there, people were all saying, oh yeah, I'll get to do a few scenes with Aidan, great, you know.
Yeah, like I thought Ashley's character was fantastic in it. Like, I really liked her kind of like kind of deep dive into her own kind of like insecurities and her own problems and trying to find a way to kind of connect with Barber, like his character, you know.
Yeah,
that quite interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the personal part of his character is probably what makes it a little different than your ordinary gumshoe. It's just that there's this other life that he has. And so,
trying to like deal with
it.
I haven't seen it in many kind of like detective like shows, but like, or even like film, but like I liked to kind of deep dive into his own kind of sexuality and almost like the systematic kind of homophobia within the kind of the Garda system.
To be honest, even in Irish society at that time, you know, he's an older character, so this is all happening to him in the 80s before Ireland got woke. So it's also that aspect of looking at it from that point of view of an older character.
Because like I think my favorite scene in the film was when him and his old partner comes into his office and they just have that conversation about what was like and what is it now and how they're trying to adapt with each other, you know. I felt like there was so much kind of like nuance in that scene, and like it really kind of gives you a kind of like feel for what the characters are doing now, like what they're experiencing now, and you know what I mean, like how you can relate to them and that kind of stuff
and how different it was. I think that's one of the things that gets, you know, it was just a very, very different Ireland. Unrecognisable, really.
Well, see, I can't.
From now. No, for some of your generation, absolutely not. But a character of that age, like mine, that was. And
Steve Wall, who plays Eddie Quinn, who's in that scene with Aidan, I mean, they worked quite hard on that scene, you know, and it was a great scene to see come to life, you know, jump off the page, you know.
Yeah.
Steve Wall and the two of them looking out the window and talking about the new woke Ireland.
I've enjoyed it. It was just like, because you very rarely see people's perspective on it, you know. Particularly people of their age, you know what I mean. Because anytime you hear stuff about that kind of stuff, it's usually kind of like in my age group and that kind of generation where like they're trying to break out and, you know, express themselves and stuff like that. So it's very interesting kind of look at someone that age who was making an attempt to adapt.
Exactly.
To it, do you know?
And also how rigid that society was at that time. But there were no choices. I'm interested in that.
Yeah, it's very kind of like, you can tell that, like, if Barbara kind of felt very overwhelmed.
Yeah.
You know? And like seeing that vulnerability in him was very kind of relatable, I think. Yeah. I love that part of his character, you know?
Good.
I think it's fantastic. I
think that, you know, people are getting feedback on that, but I mean, it's kind of still like a slightly different side to Aidan that people are seeing.
Yeah,
And as Fiona said, you know, it's more layered here, there's more of a softness, you know. I mean, he's not a kind of out and out hard boiled kind of baddie or anything like that, you know. But yeah, no, Aidan was really easy to work with, and he knew what we were up to, you know.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
he also, and he loves all that 70s stuff as well, that 70s sensibility that we all kind of grew up with, you know.
Yeah.
Great movies, great times, you know.
Yeah.
I was going to ask, like, what is, like, when you were writing the film, when you were writing the film, sorry, what were your, like, influences with not just the characters, but, like, the story itself? Because the story kind of, like, it's almost like two stories in one, in a sense, where you have his relationship and you also have the crime, like, the investigation.
What was the question?
What were your, sorry, what were your influences with that kind of story?
What were the influences? Well, I mean, I think it's like Fintan mentioned earlier, I mean, obviously, like stuff like The Drowning Pool and those great old 70s movies, that idea of a gumshoe and kind of slightly, not down at heel, but, you know, like mid-level, you know. And so that was the idea for that part of it. And then the personal stuff just came in the writing of it, actually, once you got into thinking about the character and thinking about a character like that. So that stuff came. So I think it was probably those.
Like I said earlier about those films like The Drowning Pool, like Clute, like The Long Goodbye.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just really classic movies, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we're trying to bring that kind of idea to Dublin, you know. I mean, for years I had thought about it, but, you know, in the kind of American movies, like, it's always like high octane kind of, like, in guns and everything like that. So, but when we did a bit of research into, like, just your average private investigation agency in Dublin, we realized that, you know, it's their bread and butter work is just kind of very mundane. So something like this case then would be quite exciting to them.
Okay. And also as well, I mean, the film was always, the idea was always that we would make it kind of a guerrilla style. It was always going to be a low budget. So that also informs the writing, is because you're thinking, well, can I realize this? And so, you know, that's also an aspect of the story. And the approach was, it was written knowing that we will be kind of doing it on the fly.
What was that old phrase they used to use? The budget is the aesthetic. You know?
Well, your budget is just what you have.
Exactly.
It's the truth. So, you know, that has its own discipline. Just in terms of what you can, as a producer as well, what you know you're going to be able to do. So it's easy to write it, but if you can't actually shoot it, it's no good to you. They were all part of the informed
the process of writing. It was informed almost in terms of the way the production happened, that, I mean, we had the original idea and then Fiona wrote the script and then we pitched it and then we got the money all very quickly. So that helped the whole energy of the script and the making of the film, you know. We didn't have to sit around for, you know, like a lot of people sometimes in development hell, you know, and if an idea can go stale or things can change. So the momentum just kept building. And then suddenly we were shooting.
We were shooting
words that were written like a week previously, some of them.
No,
rehearsals and stuff.
That's not correct. That is simply not correct. But
it's carefully crafted in a leather-bound book.
I mean, that is simply not correct. But we did, it is true that we got the funding decision in the middle of July and we were shooting at the end of August. So it was really good momentum.
I think that just fed into the whole thing, the story, the production.
And equally, the pandemic thing was just something we had to do because we were shooting then.
Because it gives the film like a modern kind of feel to it, you know?
Well, it was just a really practical thing. But yes, it does. And also, that was something that was a global event. So everybody remembers where they were year. So there was also that. And it's only in the background of the film. You know, it's not a... So that's how that...
Some people don't want to be reminded of it.
No, not at all. I did my final year of college in the pandemic, in the first year of the pandemic. It was a nightmare.
All from home in your room and all that. I know people like...
At different ages, it was different for everybody. But it was just such an extraordinary kind of historical event. And everybody had the same experience all over the world. So anybody who watched that, I remember that.
And then suddenly nobody knew what was going to happen. You know, was there going to be films made again? Was there going to be, where are things going to go back to normal, you know?
Aye, and some things haven't. Some things have been irrevocably changed.
Yeah, I think actually it's affected cinema audiences. I think so too.
I think the
box office figures are down a little bit on 2 or 3 years ago, for sure.
But it's not even that. I feel like people's attention spans have gotten a lot worse now.
That's really sad.
Well, it's true though.
Already low.
But that is, I feel like it's true though.
Is it now 3 seconds? Like a goldfish.
That's just like with the age of like TikTok now and like kind of other social medias where like you almost have a max of 30 seconds scrolling through. Content kind of turns into brain rot nearly. And like I've seen a lot of people like similar to my age, some younger, where like they look at a 90-minute film and they're like, no, I can't look.
I remember inviting a friend of mine. He says, I can't sit still for an hour and a half.
Well, I'm not going to say anything now.
But also too, even when we were promoting the film and we were cutting trailers, like, you know, a traditional trailer maybe is a minute and a half, but yeah. The trailers that were most effective were ones that we should cut down right down to like 10 and 15 seconds.
Because
the whole thing, you know.
Yeah.
Because I hate when a trailer reveals too much of the film. I just want a snippet of what it's going to be like and that's it. Because I've seen so many trailers where it's just like, you just see the whole plot.
Yeah.
You know what's going to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
No.
It's a whole art form in itself. I mean, you should never cut your own trailer. You should always get someone experienced. Yeah.
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 That's for sure.
Yeah.
And speaking of, actually, what was the kind of post-production process like for Barber?
Well, that was interesting because, I mean, once we had the film in the can, that was our main goal. We hadn't immediately planned to edit immediately after or anything like that. So because there was another lockdown literally as we finished.
Yeah.
We kind of
never even had a wrap.
We were due to have a wrap on the Saturday night and we finished and then everyone cancelled.
A couple of cheap bottles of champagne outside the Meath Hospital.
The glamour of it all.
From Lidl.
You make do, that's the main thing.
It was good fun. We've made up for it since.
But I
think that the whole way the story is told and it all ran together, really, didn't it?
Yeah. But there is some interesting stuff about after what happened with the editing and stuff.
We can talk about that. We had somebody in mind, but she wasn't available, but she put us in touch with her agent. It's actually an agency in Paris for European editors.
Oh, cool.
And this woman said to us, actually, you know, here, have a look. Some of these people are available, you know, remotely as such. So there was this guy just jumped out at me called Nicholas the Tot, you know, who's got credits like Die Hard 4 and Stoker and Wolverine, you know. And I was going, yeah, okay. And so we got him a script and he really liked it. And with the low budget that, he said, I've got 8 weeks. So basically we shipped the hard drives and everything over to him.
Yeah.
In Berlin.
And we talked exclusively on the phone, you know, and I'd look at stuff online that he had put up and stuff like that. Cool. So basically this guy, like, who's an American working in Berlin, edited the film.
Yeah.
And like a broader, that'd be like the final draft. Your editing is almost like your final draft.
Yeah,
and he really whipped it into shape.
Yeah.
I was delighted when I saw the first cut.
Yeah.
It was just a big moment. Yeah.
She's doing Avatar now.
Avatar 3.
Avatar 3.
He's moved his family to Wellington in New Zealand.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fantastic. Wild.
Yeah. So we had him again, just that window, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then what he was interested in, he quite liked Carter Burwell, as I do, the kind of guy who scores the Coen Brothers films.
Oh, cool.
So he was using Carter Burwell as a temporary score. And then I said, well, Jesus, could we reach out to Carter Burwell? So we did. And Carter Burwell said, yeah, well, actually, I'm busy for the next 3 or 4 years, but here's a guy on my team who's really good, an up-and-coming guy. So that's how we got Forrest Gray, who did the score.
He's
based in LA, so that all worked remotely as well. So, like, I was sending stuff to Nicholas' stuff was sending stuff to him, and it was all happening.
And that would have been something that probably would never have happened, because Nicholas would never have been in Berlin with nothing to do. The pandemic actually worked quite well for the kind of way we were making it. So that was extremely fortunate. What are the odds of that?
He
wrote a very nice piece recently about how he enjoyed. We never actually have met.
No, we wouldn't.
We've only just talked on the phone. Like, I mean, I know what he looks like just from pictures and stuff like that, but we often say that we wouldn't even necessarily know what we look like when we meet. So, and it was a very close relationship, you know.
And he was really terrific.
And again, that wouldn't have happened if it was normal circumstances. I was going into Windmill or whatever and sitting with the editor over 3 months, you know.
How was like the workflow between like two separate countries with like, I'm assuming
easy, everything now with technology. You know, we had a very good post house called Highwire, so you know, when somebody wants this rushes or this sound, it's all transferred in the internet, as they say. And then, like, the sound mix then happened then again. Two guys, like Nicky Moss and Fionnán Higgins, like, working away on it in their spare time and other times, you know. So
yeah,
it all just... And then we'd every now and then we'd check in. And then finally there was a DCP made, and we went in one morning to the lighthouse and saw it on the big screen, and then everything just seemed to click, you know. Yeah. It's just, it, you're working all towards that moment of,
yeah,
of
yeah.
How does it sound? How does it look, you know?
And obviously Owen McPolin shot it, and he's an extremely... Well, he's very talented, but he's also very experienced. You know, he's working on... What's Foundation now?
Yeah.
And all those really big shows. So he was really fantastic and brought a lot. I mean, it looks...
He's worked on Vikings, hasn't he?
Yeah. Doctor Who as well. Yeah. Outlander recently
Yeah. So he's a great...
And we did... We got a very good camera package. You know, we had state-of-the-art gear, like top lenses, shooting in low light, everything, you know.
Yeah.
And then Robert Flanagan did sound. And I mean, he's on, you know, like Cocaine Bear.
Yeah.
I recently watched that, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he couldn't come to the screening the night because he's on Sonic the Hedgehog 3 or something like that.
Yeah, so we were very fortunate. We had a lot of very experienced people, and friends.
And a great design team, I must say. The first time I worked with them, Tracy O'Hanlon and Declan Sheridan, they're just brilliant at props and the look of the office and the look of everything.
So, and it was a tiny crew. There was only 15 of us. So the whole thing, it was very intimate. So it was very, very mobile. We could move quite quickly, and Brian Willis was the line producer. So it was a good mix of, like, people with lots of experience and people with not so much.
Yeah.
So, you know, it really...
Yeah, and we brought our own experience in essentially low-budget filmmaking to bear.
Yeah,
you know, this is our fourth film now. So, I mean, we have... And we have Owen has shot all four. Yeah. You know, so you build up a kind of... I mean,
a short
as I
say, really.
Collaboration is so important in film.
Oh, yeah, communication you know, is so key.
And you need to get on with people, and the people need to work together as a unit.
But the less people there are, the easier it is for everyone to get on.
Yeah, we were mobile enough because, you know, we didn't have to... You know, sometimes when you're moving a film, it's like a whole...
It's huge,
Like trucking business.
Well, that's the thing, like, you're like working with, like, nearly 30 people sometimes. And it's... Communication is so key with it because, like, if there's one word, like, people misinterpret or, like, don't
even hear
it.
Just like moving a machine. So this was really much lighter, much more.
And we had to be because of, again, going back to the whole background of the COVID and so on. Do you know what I mean? We had to be quite efficient.
Yeah.
And we didn't really, there wasn't much sort of hanging around. Like
time constraints and everything.
Yeah. And, I mean, even the way we ate and everything, it was all, like, kind of individual.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was going to ask about the cinematography with Owen. I quite liked the kind of like how he made Dublin City look. There's some lovely wide shots in it, and it kind of gave you like the atmosphere and like kind of like I said earlier with the isolation, like it gives you that kind of feel, you know, it gives you that kind of like sense of like Aidan's kind of like Aidan's character is kind of trapped and like he doesn't really know where to go next, even with his connections to the Garda, and then like with his relationship with his ex-wife and his daughter, you know. I found that quite interesting, and the cinematography really kind of brought that out.
Loneliness of the character, and then
the location as well. I mean, obviously that's always a great part of filmmaking, is like location hunting. So we were lucky with both his apartment and his office. His apartment, you know, it's close
to our house.
It's just this big room that, and you're just looking up over like Euston Station and the city that way. It's a different angle on it, and then the office then is this Georgian building that they restored down on the Ormond Quay.
Oh, it was lovely.
It was basically an empty building with all this beautiful wood and wallpaper. So we just brought everything in, filmed, and then took everything out.
Yeah.
You know?
Nice.
And we had those lovely windows overlooking the Liffey.
We were in the Mar, and we shot a bunch of stuff in the Marlin.
Hmm.
So we used all of the locations that we had to the max.
Yeah, of course.
So we had to do very little moving, really. That was the plan.
How did you manage to get the mansion?
That was just a connection to a friend of a friend that we were out visiting that house one time, and when we were making the film, I said we're going to need a kind of a fancy house for where the character is based, so we just called them and they said a funny thing about that house that we used it for a few things because they have their own bar.
Mm.
So we were able to reconstruct our bar in their bar.
Well, we just put our characters in their bar. That was
So you know, I mean, we were trying to recreate like the kind of the Grogan's kind of Kyo's vibe.
But all the bars were closed. So we maxed out on all of the locations that we had. But
yeah.
And sometimes when we finish early, myself and Owen and Aidan and the kind of camera assistant would hop in the car and get him to do some driving shots, you know, just to pick them up as we were going along.
Yeah, like kill two birds with one stone.
So. Yeah, exactly. So we're able to like use cars and change the reg and stuff like that, you know. So it just looks bigger than what actually was, you know. Yeah. Which is great, you know.
Yeah.
I was going to ask as well, like, how was the distribution process like? Because the scene you got Eclipse Pictures, was it?
Yeah, terrific.
Yeah.
Well, they were there from the beginning. Yeah. You know, when we were pitching into Screen Ireland, you usually need kind of a letter of interest from a distributor.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And we have worked with Siobhan before on other stuff, but they've done a really, really good job.
Yeah,
I mean,
terrific.
It's, you know, for a film like this to be opening on 14 screens.
Yeah, it's incredible.
It's really great.
Honestly, yeah, for independent, you know, Irish filmmakers.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, I mean, it's in all the multiplexes and everything, yeah, like, which is really cool. You know,
yeah,
I mean,
they
that's
just
what you want.
Yeah.
You want people to see Irish films, you know, and for them to compete. So they've done it, and it's been a very clever campaign, and everything is like on the clippings of tin. So it's really good.
Nice, really good.
Yeah, no, they brought in this kind of a digital marketing agency, and they've just made all these very snappy kind of social media assets.
Yeah, like
called
TV spots and stuff.
Yeah.
Not even TV spots, but this is on social media.
Mostly social media, but it's all like there's one format for Instagram, there's one format for Twitter, there's one format
for
YouTube.
Yeah.
You know, you don't see it so wide anymore. It's all like vertical.
So they've done a really great job.
And the good press as well. Obviously, a lot of people are interested in talking to Aidan, so that's been very useful too. Aidan's been great and Aisling as well. She was on Ireland AM this morning. She was
Yeah.
So a steady stream of things. So yeah, we hope now runs now for a little while.
As long as it can.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that it was going out like 5 times a day in like the movies at Dundrum, I mean, that's
just brilliant.
It's great.
It's fantastic.
You know?
We
never imagined that.
Because it's something special when you see like a film you've worked on be on the big screen. Like, I remember the first time I've seen like a film I worked on the big screen, and it's like, to me, it felt like an out of body experience. I was like, holy fuck, like this, I worked on this. Do you know what I mean? Like,
it is.
We feel the same, holy fuck. We worked on this.
I've seen it three or four times now, but watch it again tonight. There's some bits of it I just love.
Yeah.
You know, just love seeing them. And I mean, I love the way it kind of, the momentum builds. It gets faster and faster.
The pacing is fantastic.
And it's nice to see a film with audiences, and, you know, it's a completely different. I mean, that's the thing about cinema. I mean, I know that it's taken a bit of a kicking, but there's a communal experience of watching stuff with a group of strangers that's a really cool. You can't jump up and make a cup of tea. You can't pause.
No, you
just have to stay in the moment.
Yeah, and just experience.
Exactly.
It.
Yeah. And it's a different experience than, I know everyone has big screens and blah, 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 but it's just, it's the communal thing that makes cinema. So I hope
that people
refined it.
I think it will, to be honest. I don't think cinema will ever die out.
But it is.
And also, I think, obviously, Irish people like seeing Irish stories. That's why, I mean, I go to see every Irish film I can, always.
Yeah, like
you
The
know?
Quiet Girl and, like,
I mean, it's a good fettle at the moment. But, yeah, I mean, I think that also Dubliners, like, I mean, we've seen so many films where Dublin sometimes using a backdrop. Mm. Could be Belfast or London. Or we see a movie where they're driving up Stephen's Green and the next thing they're in Stony Batter. You know,
you're obsessed with that.
Yeah, I'm always trying to be geographically
always
correct.
Always banging on about the geography.
But it's a city that lends itself to filmmaking, I think.
I think so too.
Yeah.
It's a very cinematic town, I think. Or city, sorry.
Yeah,
and it's small, which is great. So it's you can get around it without too much administration.
Too much hassle,
Especially
during the lockdown, I'd say.
Yeah, well, that was a gift. An absolute gift.
Yeah.
No parking hassles.
So do you feel like a big like weight off your shoulders now?
Yeah.
It's finally done.
Today, actually, once we saw they sent us the box office figures from the weekend, it was just a big sigh of relief.
It's
holding its own. It got into the top 10.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is sweet. It is something so modest. It is. It's great.
So onwards,
onwards and upwards.
Yeah.
Do you have anything in the pipeline? Anything in?
Yeah, well, we're developing stuff. We're developing a TV off Barber.
Oh,
cool.
A lot of people said that to us,
I can see that, though. There's little kind of, like, sprinkles and inklings of, like... Because you get, like, throughout the film, you get little splices of his character, and, like, you're kind of like, ooh, I kind of want that to be more developed. And I can see that being, like, a four-part series or something like that.
Yeah,
so...
Well, Fiona's working away on it, jumping from one script to six.
Oh.
But, I mean, there's plenty of things to explore. And plenty of cases. Yeah, it'd be kind of like a movie, like a case of the week.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see. But obviously it's great just to be back making films, you know. Yes. Sometimes the gaps between films for one reason or another, like, they can be quite large, you know.
Mm. Yeah, well, I mean, it's so hard.
Yeah, and, you know, it's been a very good experience.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming on.
No, not at all. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah.
It's been fantastic.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Good. Yeah.